B-Pod Studios.
Welcome to Wrestling Inside the Ropes with James Stewart.
I'm the best. I'm the best in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day.
And Mike Sarge Riley.
I don't know if you realize it or not, but you're trespassing on private property. When you walk through here, through these ropes, you're in my yard. Bad things happen in my yard.
Wrestling Inside the Ropes.
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports, including Over Under, which is crushing it right now. No Joe Murray this week. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Mike and I were both going to start off the show trashing WWE. And no, you know what? There's a big news story. Eric Bischoff got fired. The draft was a disaster. But you know what? We're going to start off positive, and then we'll take our anger out on the show later, you know, just to appease Tucher and Roosh. So we'll do that later on in the show. But AEW was at Boston University last week, and Mike and I went. We went with Joe Murray and Andy Wong, and we had about as good a time at a wrestling show as we've probably had in a long time. Probably highlighted, I would say, by the Chris Jericho promo, called his group the Inner Circle, the Young Bucks opening match. They were upset by Private Party. You know, Kenny Omega's match that they showed on Dark against Joey Janela tonight. We're taping this on Tuesday night. Dark is AEW's YouTube series. Kenny Omega and Joey Janela just tore the house down of BU's Aganis Arena. So a lot of good stuff out of the AEW experience last week. My big takeaway is how the Young Bucks had this fabulous opening match, and they were upset in the tag team championship tournament by Private Party, who I'm not sure is there yet on the same level, but the Young Bucks are clearly trying to establish other teams and make new stars out of what they deem themselves to be established stars. And maybe they are established stars. AEW's numbers are 1 million viewers back-to-back weeks, so that's a good start to their program. Hopefully this trend continues upwards for the Young Bucks, and they prove that even without the tag team titles, that they are what many believe to be the best tag team in the world today. Mike, your thoughts from AEW at BU last week?
Well, like you said, that opening match, that set the tone for the night. Private Party with the upset on the pinfall after the roll-up there. It was just back and forth, really fast pace, on the edge of your seat kind of a match. And, you know, again, with the tag team being the tag team tournament being highlighted here for AEW, a perfect way to really start off a show in a new promotion on a weekly basis like that, to have your top tag team in the world go down and essentially put over Private Party. And, you know, the crowd reaction was really in shock, I guess, but also excited at the same time too. So that really helps. That goes a long way right there for Private Party and for how they're trying to position themselves here in this tag team tournament. Again, with Chris Jericho and the Inner Circle, that was a really cool thing to see that be born right there in Boston. Darby Allin's win to become the number one contender. Good match. I thought it was pretty good. There were some points on the show where I thought it got, you know, a little foot off the gas with the Britt Baker match right there, the tag team match. And I thought that was okay. But, you know, overall, a very, very good show, and excited here for the product of AEW. The numbers, as you said, over 1 million viewers each week. I think that's going to stay very steady. I think it will. And this is where WWE is probably going to hurt themselves, as they did see in the official week two of the unofficial Wednesday Night War, with NXT not doing so well against AEW on the ratings. I only think that's going to get a little worse for NXT and even better for AEW.
one thing about this show at BU for AEW, the crowd, the energy of the crowd, they were happy to be there. They wanted to be there, and they bought into as much as possible.
Yep.
I felt that when I was in Chicago for AEW's pay-per-view All Out.
Yep.
The crowd wasn't familiar with everybody, but they wanted to be there, and they wanted to give everything a chance because there's this positive vibe, this positive energy for this company. And even with the Chris Jericho promo where he introduced his stable called the Inner Circle, simple name. It consists of Jake Hager, Santana Ortiz, who you might remember as LAX, and Tomato Can, Sammy. I'm just going to call him Tomato Can and Sammy. I still see Jake Hager as Jack Swagger.
Yeah.
But just as a reference point, I still call Rogers Center the Sky Dome. It's going to be that way for a little while. But one of the differences is Jericho's promo felt real to me. Yep. It's real to me, damn it, as somebody once famously said, crying to Jim Cornette. Yep. Jericho's promo felt very real in that he went out there with bullet points, an idea of what he needed to say and the message he needed to get across, and how to deliver it was up to him. Very simple. They introduced Jake Hager, and the crowd did We the People, because that's the Jack Swagger thing.
Right.
Jericho cut him off, cut the crowd chant off, told him that it was dumb, essentially, bad creative. And the crowd cheered because they wanted to cheer because they got a reaction. And then Jericho continued on his promo. And what I liked about the promo is it kept focus on every bullet point that he needed to hit. He had a tag team match later that night, and he had a title defense against Cody at the pay-per-view should he win in Philadelphia and retain in Philadelphia against Darby Allin, which they tied in at the end of the show. Darby Allin wins the number one contenders match. Darby Allin comes down on the skateboard after Jericho has beaten Dustin Rhodes, and they have a little back and forth, progressing, giving you something to tease for the next show. Very simple. Very, very simple. But what I liked about Jericho's promo is he says, I never liked the Rhodes family. Mm-hmm. And I always thought Dusty was a jerk, right? Yeah. Now, Dusty has since passed on. But just that simplicity of, I never liked Dusty. He was a jerk. No details given. No details needed. Because everybody's like, ooh, he went there.
Yep.
And how many people on the mainstream level have bad things to say about Dusty Rhodes?
Yeah, not that many.
Not that many. So Chris Jericho, whether it's real or fake, calling Dusty Rhodes a jerk who's since passed on, ooh, that was good. That was good. Yeah. That was simple. Very simple. Yeah. Very good stuff there.
Yeah.
And that's why Chris Jericho is the AEW champion, and that's why Chris Jericho is what I think is the modern-day Terry Funk.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Terry Funk was a mainstay in one promotion for a long time, and then he kind of traveled the circuit as an independent at different points. You know, Jericho, I will think of Jericho as a WCW guy, even though he spent the majority of his career in WWE. But now I think of Jericho as more of an independent than anything else.
Yeah, no, that's a fair assessment. I'd also, maybe when it's all said and done with Chris Jericho, he could be the modern day Ric Flair. And the reason I say that is because Flair had so much success, in the WCW days, NWA, and the WWF for a short period of time in the early 90s, and coming back, of course, and then bouncing to the WCW mid 90s. And then Jericho, here he is, your first ever AEW champion. So good on the microphone, too, what he does. And again, three promotions kind of like Flair. I think that says a lot right there. So I could see the Terry Funk thing, but I kind of aim a little more with the Ric Flair because of the way he's being pedestaled, the way they're maneuvering him as the champion right now for AEW, the first ever AEW champion. That will always be in his namesake. That will never, ever change history right there. So making that title extra special is a big thing when you have it around the waist of someone like Chris Jericho. And so darn good
at his promos. And that's where AEW is going to capitalize here, because there is an awe effect with Chris Jericho. There's also an awe effect with Jon Moxley. I didn't talk about him when I talked about the opening thought of AEW. His first match back in the ring, that was, you know, a fairly good match, but there's just a real high peak interest for those two guys right now. And I think that's where they're going to have to capitalize going down the line here, with two former WWE superstars now at the top of the AEW card.
The eyes were on Jon Moxley just leaving WWE, and he did everything the right way on the way out. And then it's, well, what's he going to be? What's he going to be next? And Jon Moxley being this aggressive, simple aggressive character where he just wants to get in the ring and fight.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Rowdy Piper in him. There's a lot of ECW brawling in Jon Moxley. Just this Mick Foley, Terry Funk. Just this, I've compared two people to Terry Funk. That's wild.
Yeah.
Just his work is just, he's trying to make it very believable and very aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things with the Steve Austin character when it became Stone Cold was every movement had a purpose and every move looked really good and really smooth. And I think that's what you're seeing with Jon Moxley. And he had a good, you know, speaking of Steve Austin, the Ringmaster, right? He was brought in originally to WWE as a mechanic. That's kind of what Sean Spears is right now. He's just somebody in there to make sure that people have good matches. And Tully Blanchard's the star of the team, being the manager in the same way that the Red Rooster was the second fiddle to Bobby Heenan, if you remember that duo. Too many comparisons early on in the program today. But,
No, it's good, though.
That's kind of how it is. Main event was a little bit of a cluster. The TV main event for Dynamite was a little bit of a cluster, but it's another win over Jericho, over Dustin Rhodes. Transition to Darby Allin, I mentioned, was good stuff. Just AEW had that good vibe, man. The Kenny Omega, Joey Janela match to end the show. Just a great, great vibe. First time I've seen Kenny Omega win. I was 0 for Kenny Omega before last Wednesday at BU's Aganis Arena.
Wow. Yeah. And that was a good match. Joey Janela and him, the non-sanctioned match. It was great. And just getting so many tweets over the last few days about the show, people that were there or did watch. 99.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Percent positive about AEW. People are all in on this. They really are. And one particular tweet I got, they said, you know, this was the best show that Boston has had in a long time. And another guy said, I've been to two AEW shows. They were at the Double or Nothing show in Vegas, which to this day, James, I still regret not going to. And then, of course, the AEW show in Boston. And he said, were the best live wrestling shows he's ever seen. And he's been to a ton of WWE shows over the year. So that's over the years. So that says a lot right there for that matter as well.
It's also the vibe of the crowd. The crowd wants to be there. They're not nitpicking at things. They're giving things a chance because they're learning as well. They're not cynical. They're not bitter.
Yep. And for a 2-hour program, moving it right along, 6 minutes total on the microphone during that whole show. Everything else was in the ring and it moved right along. It was real wrestling that we appreciate as a hardcore diehard fan, if you will.
Yeah, I'm into the ring work and the simple to the point promos, not these comedic skits that are written by some Hollywood writer. It's not what I want. It's not what's doing it for my palate these days.
Yep.
So you ready to bash WWE?
Yeah, where do you want to start? I mean, there's so much to choose from.
Well, so let's start with the news of the day. As we are recording this is Tuesday. Eric Bischoff got fired from WWE. I think Conrad Thompson's next podcast is going to be called 15 Weeks and 5 Days.
I mean, whatever, to Conrad's credit, he's very good working with people. So I would not be surprised if that's the highest rated podcast by the end of the year.
Bruce Pritchard, well, so Eric's podcast, 83 Weeks, usually comes out Monday morning at 6 a.m., and they did a best of.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of worried me that something wasn't right, because they usually find the 90 minutes to 2 hours at some point to do the podcast.
Yep.
And magically, Eric Bischoff is fired at about 2 o'clock today. And, oh, there's a podcast that Conrad said, oh, we taped this morning. So it wouldn't shock me if Eric got the news and then they taped the podcast, which I haven't finished yet. Maybe Eric said something at the end of it, but I don't know. We'll get there. I assume that they'll do an episode on it next week. Maybe they won't. I don't know.
Oh, they'll definitely touch on it down the line.
Yeah, I think that they will.
Yeah.
So Bruce Pritchard is the new executive director of SmackDown and reports directly to Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
But reality is, these are still Vince McMahon shows.
Right.
So kind of the news, I tried to do a little bit of digging. I didn't get kind of information that I was confident in bringing to the podcast. So I'm going to sit on it. Maybe I can verify a few details.
Yeah.
Here's what I'll tell you is Brian Alvarez, who works with Uncle Dave over at the Wrestling Observer, Dirt Sheet, said on his podcast that Bruce Pritchard has been writing SmackDown all along, and there are people in WWE that didn't know exactly what Eric Bischoff did. And when Eric Bischoff did put his hands on things, people didn't like it, and it made people in WWE want to quit.
Wow.
Brian Alvarez also mentioned that Eric Bischoff didn't know most of the roster.
Hmm.
So if those things are true, then that's why he got fired after 4 months. And there's no doubt about it.
Yeah. How do you not know the roster if you're writing for them?
Well, so this was one of the things about Eric Bischoff coming in at 60-something years old.
Yeah.
And him, I think he was hired at the suggestion of Bruce Pritchard.
Mm.
But Eric Bischoff's style is probably different than Vince McMahon's. Perception would lead me to believe that Eric Bischoff is a pretty laid-back guy.
Yeah.
And he's not the 24/7 obsessive employee that Vince McMahon is.
Right.
And if you want to work for that company, you're going to get a 2 a.m. phone call being like, "Eric, I got an idea. Let's go through this." And you have to answer the phone. And Brian Alvarez said, you know, there were times that they couldn't find Eric Bischoff when they needed him for things.
Right. And
the fact that Bruce was already writing the show, that's a bad sign there. And and Bruce is a vice president there, and he's one of Vince McMahon's trusted lieutenants.
Right.
So, I mean,
where he's been fired before and coming back again here for the second time in 10, 11 years, right?
Exactly. But Bruce knows what Vince wants and knows how to execute the game plan as best as his ability, even if Bruce disagrees with what Vince is doing.
He knows how to play the game.
But one of the problems, Mike, here with WWE and its creative is Vince is 70-something.
75, I believe.
72, 73, 70-something. It's his company. He gets final say in everything.
Of course.
Paul Heyman is 50-something. Bruce Pritchard is 50-something. Eric Bischoff was 60-something.
Mm-hmm.
So who are they writing for? Who are they doing creative for?
It's going right to the desk of Vince McMahon. And for what Vince is actually 74, confirmed. But this is something with what we saw when Bischoff started writing for SmackDown a few months ago, that, you know, the reports of Vince ripping up the show right away, 2-3 shows in a row. So that's a red flag in its own right there. Let the guy have a chance. Maybe the first show, sure, I can get it. I get that. But back to your point of Bruce Pritchard taking over for SmackDown, it's not too much of a surprise to me, because Pritchard had worked for Vince McMahon in the 1980s for a good amount of time.
Bruce has been doing sports entertainment wrestling for 40 years.
However, he's been working under Vince McMahon longer than Eric Bischoff, and he knows how his style is, and that's why he's the easy shoo-in there for SmackDown over Eric Bischoff. So, I mean, it's kind of, it's disappointing for Bischoff because I like him, and I like him personally. The couple times I've met him, very nice guy, and you never want to see someone lose their job. You never root against someone. If you do, you're a sick individual. Shame on you. But, you know, Eric Bischoff, I know he's going to land on his feet. In fact, I saw a tweet earlier today that someone said, now we're taping this on Tuesday, so with AEW coming up on Wednesday, they said that Bischoff, if I were Bischoff, get to Philadelphia tomorrow for AEW and give him a live microphone. So I'm sure they've already had a phone call or two, if not about tomorrow night, definitely down the line with AEW. But Bischoff here and the future of him, I hope he lands on his feet. I hope he does. But the whole thing with SmackDown here now on Fox and so forth after the draft, it's going to be interesting to see how this all pans out. And I like Bruce Pritchard running the show there. I'm okay with that, but we'll see how it all pans out going forward.
I bet that there's language in Bischoff's release that he can't do anything for 90 days relating to another wrestling company. I will say, however,
conflict of interest.
If there are live shows and Eric Bischoff wants to do a live show, say November 17th in the Boston area, the night before Monday Night Raw, I think it would sell out pretty quickly.
Oh, absolutely.
I think and it also, would sell out pretty quickly.
And I can confirm to you for some people I spoke to today that Bischoff has a good relationship with Triple H. They actually do get along fairly well. And I mean, when and if that day is to come of Vince passing on the baton or whatever, I think Triple H would bring him back.
So you say that, Mike, and I'm not doubting you.
Yeah.
But if Eric Bischoff is, and I'm paraphrasing Brian Alvarez's report, if Eric Bischoff is considered lazy, why would Triple H want to hire him?
I don't think that he would not want to hire him. I think that he's a good, he trusts him. You know, he knows that he can put a good story together, his background. And if it's his decision too, it'll be his company. Essentially, he'll be the guy calling the shot. He wants to make an impact of saying, all right, Vince didn't give him a chance. I'm going to give him a chance. Actually let him stay a little more than 3-4 months. Give the guy another opportunity.
Okay, so Vince dies tomorrow and Triple H calls Eric Bischoff and, you know, puts him in charge of SmackDown and they fire Bruce Pritchard?
I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen. But I think that you could see Eric Bischoff back in the saddle when that day is to come because they are tight. They get along. They have a good relationship.
I mean, it was Bruce Pritchard who suggested Eric Bischoff come on board, so there's that. Somebody else who has requested a release, Mike Bennett, Mike Kanellis, Mike Bennett. In short, Mike Bennett went to Twitter and told the world that he requested his release from WWE. Mm-hmm. The last guy who publicly asked for his release was Luke Harper, and he ended up not working for months, and then he was back on TV, and now via the draft, they have split up Harper and Rowan. So Luke Harper's days are numbered in WWE, in my opinion, because you would keep those two together if you had longer-term plans for them. Luke Harper wasn't even the draft pool, I don't think. No. I believe Sean Spears was the last WWE performer who asked for his release and was granted it. Just for informational purposes, I think the last house show that Mike Bennett worked was October of 2018.
Wow.
He signed a new 5-year contract just a few months ago, and he was put on Raw with Maria, and they did this story that I tried to justify because I was trying to defend Mike staying for the company, even though I felt I tended to believe he didn't really want to sign that deal. But it was just so much money, and it was 5 years at, I think, his double what his downside was. Wow. So he's working one day a week and making double what his downside was. And that's just, I think that. I don't know that.
Yep.
Well, so he's got security for his family, And he just kind of went with it. And then they put together the storyline that just absolutely humiliated him. Yeah. And the whole thing was, oh, well, you know, he'll get his big comeback. He'll get his big comeback. That big comeback wasn't coming. And I think that because this is a thing with this company now, is they are bringing a bunch of people to TV tapings and then not using them.
Right.
And I think there was a fear that they were going to fall into this trap, they being Mike and Maria, of going to TV, wasting a day, and collecting a nice paycheck and not being used. And they want to work. They're happy to work.
Right.
They're happy to go out and do something. Mike Bennett's dream was to be in WWE, to be a WWE superstar. That was the dream. Yep. And he got there, and it took him 3 years to explain why he's Mike Kanellis. And then he's just, one of my friends has this term called P-whipped, which I don't believe is a radio broadcast term, but I think we all know what that means.
Yeah.
And so he was supposed to come back from that eventually, and it was never happening. And the thing that aggravates me the most is it's just Vince sitting there and be like, ha ha ha, see, Maria's the dominant one. This is funny. Ha 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 ha.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
And it goes to the whole, like, we're just writing for one. And you're losing viewers left here, there, and everywhere. And it's frustrating to me because I think that I might not be their audience anymore. And it's just tremendously frustrating to me, Mike.
Sure. And you know what? And Mike has been very open with his tweets, as you know. And the real tip of the iceberg for me was on Monday. The day he did ask for his release, he either put it on late Sunday night or early Monday morning. He made a comment, but it's since been deleted, that when wrestling was fun, he made something along the lines like that. It's like, oh, wow. And you know, very open that he wants to work and more than one day a week. And sure, people can listen to this podcast and critique him from the outside. You're getting paid all that money. Why don't you want to just take it and shut up and, you know, work your one day? Well, you know what? People have to be happy with life. You can't just, you know, take a paycheck and just do that. If you're not happy, you shouldn't be doing it. It's as simple as that. And he was not happy, and good for him being open about that. And Mike is also very open about his prior addiction and overcoming that. And he needs that, you know, occupation, let me say it right, to be in the ring and work and utilize his talents. Jim Cornette had a fantastic tweet.
Yes, he
did. Guy like, wasn't it awesome? And let me read it for everybody. Quote, truth is, at Real Mike Bennett should have been a top name in wrestling for the past 10 years and should sue the people booking him for the last five or so for malpractice and career assassination. Could not be more correct. So, James, I hope that we do see the reunified of the kingdom with your good your good friend Matt Taven, but a great guy, and maybe even something with AEW or a Ring of Honor again for Mike and Maria, because they have a long way to go in their career. And you know, good for him being open here. I hope he gets his due when that time is right.
A few things here, a few things to unpack. I don't know that Mike's going to get his release.
Yeah, which is sucks.
Which I continuously hear on Pritchard's podcast. If you go to Vince and you're unhappy, he's going to let you go because he doesn't want unhappy people. Mm. And I can tell you that there are a lot of people in that company, in WWE, who are not happy.
Yeah.
And there's a whole morale issue that it used to be just, if you're on Raw, you're kind of miserable. If you're on SmackDown, because nobody's paying attention to it, you're enthusiastic because you can go out and do your thing. And they all love live events. Like, they'd rather have the weekends off, but if they're on a live event, They love it. They enjoy it. Maria mm-hmm. went on her Instagram and said very clearly she did not ask for her release, which is something I had speculated about back in December when there was the report that Mike had asked for his release, or January or something like that. Mm-hmm. When their contracts were up a few months ago, I think Mike got talked into re-signing.
Yeah.
And we detailed, like, it's stupid money, it's long-term future, it's security. I don't think he saw this story as being an issue. I don't think he saw this story happening at all. I don't think anybody did. But it's the creative genius that loves pooper scoopers, Vince McMahon. but if Mike does get a release,
yeah,
he can go to Ring of Honor and work with Taven or feud with Taven or something. Like, that's easy. Sure. There's a Kingdom story to be told there.
Right.
He can go to AEW because Cody loves his work.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely loves him. He did a whole program with Mike when Cody was touring the indies. They did a show in Pittsfield, Massachusetts that we attended.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a program in Impact Wrestling, TNA, the old TNA.
Yep.
So there's something to be there. Impact is on Access now, so there's mm-hmm. money to be made there. Mike also worked New Japan, did a couple tours with Taven in New Japan. They're the former IWGP Tag Team Champions. I think they beat Anderson and Gallows to win those titles. So Mike has options. Maybe they are not the financial options that WWE brings, but if you're frustrated with your creative and you get your release, go for it.
And if you're happy, if that's going to make him happy, then absolutely, 100% stand behind him. And, you know, here's the other thing.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
And, well, what I was going to say is, and there are people who have re-signed or signed contracts with companies because they don't want to deal with jerks. They don't want to deal with creative a-holes.
Right, right. Exactly. And, you know, on the flip side, if he is not given his release, say he's not, I think for Mike Bennett, or Mike Kanellis, whatever you want to call him in the WWE, I think a good opportunity for him would be NXT. Really do. Because...
No, my guess is, Mike, is that if he doesn't get his release, he sits at home, he collects his downside, and we'll see him on social media going down a tube slide with his daughter at the Chuck E. Cheese.
Right. Well, yes, but do you think that could be in the cards for him if he's not given the release? Listen, Mike, we know you're upset. We don't have anything for you here on Raw or SmackDown. We don't have anything for Maria, but what about NXT? Let's put you here.
I don't think that they do that.
That sucks.
It does, doesn't it?
That really sucks.
They put the Usos and Naomi on ice.
Yep.
Matt Hardy.
What happened to him?
Is on a trampoline. Good Dennis Stamp reference last night on Twitter from Matt Hardy. Of course, the late Dennis Stamp, a figure from the Terry Funk Beyond the Mat documentary.
Yep.
Another Terry Funk reference. That's a lot. They have all this talent and they're not doing anything with it. Nothing. Just because they can, right? It's only 11% of their payroll.
Yeah. That's really disappointing because here's your chance to, you know, add another guy that was on the main roster. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to change the pace of the ratings and everything, but it still would help. I think it would generate more interest for NXT, maybe have him feud up against Finn Balor, put someone else over, just more repetition, make the guy happy. But apparently, if that's not the case, then... You know, Michael just have to collect his check, and then he'll figure something out when the time is right.
Okay, so little inside baseball thing here. Mm. I invested in SmackDown. We're going to talk about the draft here. But what I'm going to do is, after I give you the inside baseball thing,
let's go.
I'm going to set a timer. It's going to be for 11 minutes. As soon as that timer goes off, we're done bitching about WWE.
I'm in.
Is that fair, Mike?
I'm in. Because I want to go back to AEW.
Okay, well, I know you have a story that you want to share. We'll close the podcast with your story, okay?
Excellent.
I like stories. Here's the behind baseball stuff. I sat down and really, invested in the draft on Friday night. and I was enthusiastic about it. I'm like, okay, like they had a good SmackDown last week. They're going to follow this up. They're going to do something really interesting with the draft. And lo and behold, I sat at the computer and I typed up a bunch of notes and I was going to do an angry rant podcast at 11 o'clock at night on Friday. And I kiboshed it. I was going to talk to myself and let it out into the world. I still have my notes. I don't know if we'll get to all of the notes, but I had cusses. I had swears in them. I was angry.
Chased away after dark.
Yes. And so I'm like, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing another angry podcast. I don't want to do this. I really don't want to do this. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to set this. So I have the notes here. If we get to them, if we go through them, and maybe we will.
Yeah.
I'm starting to ramp up now. I'm going to put this timer on here. I'm going to put it on now. And once this timer goes off, we're done talking about WWE. So
sounds like a plan.
WWE did this draft thing, which is really cool. It's a really fun concept. And you know what they did? They sucked. 5 hours of my time wasted. Why? Because Stephanie has to go out wooden as all hell and just announce random draft picks that this stupid skit of these executives in a war room just like cheering their draft picks, which it's interesting that they wore the same clothes Friday night that they wore Monday night. And there's one guy in the USA war room had this background screen that was peacock feathers instead of, like, I don't know, an actual draft board. Like, it's cute that they have the two titles on the desk or whatever, and the robot, the Fox robot, is making draft picks because of course the Fox robot is. Cletus to me is an old character from, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, like, I watched this thing, and I wanted to invest in it. Like, here are my nitpicks, right? Seth Rollins is getting booed all the time now. Anytime he shows up on screen, it's booed. Like, they did their little backstage show tonight, and they audio mixed cheers in there. No, I watched it live. He got booed. He did.
Right.
Who's a good guy and a bad guy now? Seth is getting booed. Bray is getting cheered. Bray and Lacey were drafted to SmackDown, but they're both working Raw. Bray is now scheduled to fight Seth Rollins for a Raw title at this Fakakta Crown Jewel event.
Yep.
Charlotte did months of promoting SmackDown TV shows, and now she's on Raw, and that's why apparently she dropped the title on Friday night, was because they made a last minute switch, even though they had a great plan in place. You put Charlotte on SmackDown, she's the blue brand, she's their champion. Like, it makes sense, and it's so clear that that was a day of change by Vince McMahon, because she won the title from Bayley that Sunday night at Hell in a Cell. And then they did the rematch for the title, and you know, that raised them. And then they can't give me a finish in a match. SmackDown opened up Roman versus Seth Rollins, a good match. Death taxes and Seth beats Roman. Like, other than that one stupid match that they blew that whole streak on. And it ends in a DQ, no contest, non-finish. Bray, who wasn't yet drafted anyway, beats up Seth. It goes to the whole thing, like, does anybody think less of Sasha Banks because she lost an Hell in a Cell to Becky? They don't.
No.
They just don't. So now we can't beat... So now, just to establish this, Mike, and don't worry, I'm going to let you talk.
No. I love it. I'm just taking notes. Go ahead.
WWE now has told you they can't beat Seth Rollins, they can't beat Roman Reigns, and they can't beat Bray Wyatt. Why in the f*** can't you beat these guys? I just don't get it. This is so frustrating to me. Don't give us a match and don't promote a match unless you're going to have a winner and a loser. Does anybody remember that Asuka beat Becky Lynch the same night that Becky Lynch won the Royal Rumble? Or that Charlotte beat Becky at Money in the Bank before Becky cashed in on Charlotte? Or I'm sorry, before Bayley cashed in on Charlotte. In all those situations, were Becky or Charlotte hurt in any way?
Not at all.
So Braun Strowman can be beaten clean in the middle against Seth Rollins at Clash of Champions. Braun Strowman is now going to fight a boxer at the Saudi Arabia pay-per-view. Has that hurt Braun Strowman at all, that he lost to Seth Rollins via four curb stomps and a pedigree? Did that hurt his value at all?
I don't think so.
Brock Lesnar was beaten at WrestleMania and SummerSlam pretty close to clean in the middle at the hands of Seth Rollins. And he's standing front and center as the WWE champion going into a Saudi Arabia show against Cain Velasquez, who wasn't in either draft pool. But is he on SmackDown? Because Rey Mysterio, who is his mouthpiece, is on Raw. Did that hurt Brock Lesnar one bit? So why can't this company figure out a way to beat Roman Reigns or Bray Wyatt at the hands of Seth Rollins? Again, don't put a match on my TV screen if you don't have a finish. The WWE needs to stop doing this attraction bullshit and start telling stories again. Tell me a long-term story and pay attention to details.
And I love that. That excellent rant, James. Excellent. Because too much of the title change is over and over. You talk about how it happened at the Money in the Bank there, and I totally forgot about the Oscar Becky Lynch one. Just happening too much. And I want long-term champions, long-term stories here where I'm going to remember it time after time. To go back on the draft, what you said with the executives, that really...
And by the way, they put the whole draft order on the website.
Yeah, they did. You're right.
If you go to WWE.com or Uncle Dave's site, the first 10 picks were all in order on the website. It was a cut and paste.
So, and exactly. And then also, what is the point of even doing that when, you know, you want to have some sort of mystique to it, more or less? But
respect to Andrade, who I like, mostly because he's dating Charlotte, and I co-sign on that relationship because it seems really good for both of them.
He wins,
Is he a first-round pick?
No. No. Not at all. He's probably like a fifth or sixth.
Him and Gargano had a great match in NXT in Phoenix, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
For the title, and if I have the location wrong, I'm sorry, but like, is Andrade a first-round pick?
No, absolutely not.
How do you let Samoa Joe and Rey Mysterio and Miz all get into the later rounds?
Yep.
And if you're Raw, do you not draft the SmackDown champion and use it as leverage? And how, if you're USA, do you know the rules that you can draft a team as a team and you pick Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss as separate picks and then you trade them to SmackDown for future considerations? And that was the big trade that they teased and announced on their backstage show on FS1 tonight.
Right. And
that dumb. I'm sorry, Mike, though.
No, it's fair, but they split it up. And that pissed me off so much with the executives there. A rewind of these phony actors just celebrating right there, including the Fox robot, and a chance for the WWE and the executives really to show why they made that decision or what was behind the draft pick. And they absolutely failed on that. So instead, phony actors, stupid, waste of time, no need for that, dumb. And it just seemed bad going into it last week where the commentators continuously said that the USA executives and the Fox executives, they have a lot to consider here with the draft. Like, what the hell is that about? Why are they considering that? Why do we not have a general manager or a president?
No, here's what you do, Mike. You have the executive vice president person. That would be Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff, who the fans know issues with each other. And you have them make the pick instead of just Stephanie McMahon reading a card. Here's a video package. No, you have them both out there. You have them bickering over draft picks. It's simple. It's easy storytelling. You create a rivalry between the two shows, and they didn't want to do it. They didn't want to do it, and I don't understand why.
And what I didn't understand, I know it's not too big a deal, but what's the point of drafting R-Truth to Raw as the 24/7 champion when essentially that title can be defended anytime, right? What the hell is the point of that?
Because it was a USA idea that was made to create more interest in the third hour of Raw, even though it's been more about their social media. So and the only reason why Carmelo was drafted to SmackDown is because Corey Graves is there. They're keeping couples together.
Right. Well, we saw that with Andrade, Charlotte, Becky, Rollins, of course. Yeah, makes sense. But
and they had to put Aleister Black on Raw because Selena Vega and them are married.
Well, you just killed the concept of the 24/7 championship, not knowing the whole USA idea behind that. So that concept is dead.
But overall, I just think really surprised at how it all panned out, not impressed with the way they did it. And they could have done, again, I really think they let this one get away with the draft board there and the executives. No explanation. It was pathetic, absolutely pathetic and stupid. Put Paul Heyman there and put Eric Bischoff, you know, feuding and having a good back and forth, like the original one, the first ever one in 2002 was great with Vince McMahon and Ric Flair, you know, bragging about who they were going to pick. That's great. Bring that back. You know, you're the WWE. Brag about, have Paul Heyman brag about why USA is better, or have Eric Bischoff or whoever's going to be the SmackDown there at the time of the draft brag why Fox is the better thing. Have some pride in that there. They absolutely showed nothing with fake actors. That was an utter disgrace. And again, it just too Hollywood. I hate to say that, but it was absolutely fake. It was awful. So they let this one get away, and I don't see. I don't even know who won the draft. I'd probably say Raw. I think Raw has a better roster than SmackDown. I really do.
So it's SmackDown is the entertainment roster. Raw is the work rate roster.
Yeah. I give Raw an edge. I mean, Becky Lynch is huge for me.
But you know what, Mike? We all lost because we wasted 5 hours of our life.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of us tuned in. It's like, oh, well, Charlotte should be on SmackDown because of her promo work in the months leading up to the show. And Becky should be on Raw and Sasha should be. And just all these things that really just kind of didn't make any sense. Just so frustrating.
Yeah, it was...
That's it. We're done. That's the draft. Let's wrap up the podcast, Mike. What's your story?
So last week, AEW in Boston at the Aganis Arena, there's a friend of mine who has some extensive work as a television cameraman in the New England area. And he's also a former independent wrestler himself, but has since changed careers and focused on the production side for television. And this guy... was lucky enough to have been in contact with AEW over the last 6 months about a job position where he formally applied to Turner. And before they went to weekly TV, the position was still open, I'd say, in like February. What are we now? June. So right after the Double or Nothing pay-per-view, that's when the open was there. So he never heard back from the Turner for a little bit, and he was able to access Cody Rhodes. He got a connection to reach out to him, and he got Cody Rhodes, and Cody and he were emailing back, and he said, well, about a month ago, up until a month ago, Cody said, we're coming to Boston. I'd like for you to come to the Aganis Arena and show me your tape, and let's meet up in person. Cody, being the kind of guy he is, he said that he didn't feel right telling him via email that there was no position for this individual. He wanted to tell him face to face. But what he did say to him was that you're at the top of our list for anything else that may come about, because Turner decided to hire whatever they had, or union guys and, you know, their own brand. But Cody does have him there. And he also was kind enough to forward him other emails from the Jacksonville Jaguars, which of course is owned by Tony Khan's family, and other such positions that may become available. And since then, they've talked a couple of times since the Wednesday night show in Boston last week. And it looks like that something could be panning out here for him over the next 6 months with AEW. Now, also, he was given a backstage pass to hang out at the show before, during, and after. And he was sitting in the catering, and his favorite wrestler of all time is Chris Jericho, was able to have a conversation with Jericho at the table as Jericho went down to his table and was just talking to him for a good 45 minutes about life and about the business and so forth. And he said, my only regret was not taking a selfie with Chris Jericho. I said, don't have that as a regret. You had an absolutely awesome conversation with him about life. And this individual has gone through depression, and he's since battled that, and he's doing okay now. But Jericho gave him really good advice on life and so forth. Where do you want to be? What do you want to do? And one thing he kind of influenced him on was to maybe go out there and talk to people or groups to other individuals that are dealing with depression to help them out, because he thinks he has a message to share with them. So to get that from your favorite wrestler of all time, that is a better honor than to have a selfie with Chris Jericho. Sure, you can say you had a picture with him, but Jericho and he, they did communicate, and they do have personal information shared with one another, all based on connections right there. And I'm rooting for this guy that he gets a job with AEW in the next few months, because it looks as though that could be the case.
One of my old college professors, Len Malo, who is no longer with us.
Yep.
He always told me, always tell your story, because you don't know who needs to hear it. And
I love it.
Chris Jericho is one of the better, more personable people in the wrestling world. I've had two relatively brief interactions, but I kind of got a vibe that Jericho is one of the good ones.
And you know what, Jimmy? What I didn't touch on, too, in the whole story, my friend was sitting down at the table by himself, and Jericho saw him, and he actually seeked his way out to him and said, "Hey, man, what's your name? What are you here for?" And he told him the story. He didn't get the job, and Jericho goes, "Geez, that sucks, but you know, whatever I can do to help you out." And he said, "What is your story? What is your story?" Just like Len Malo said. Yeah. And there you go. So, class act. I just got so much more respect for Chris Jericho after hearing that story. Not that I didn't before, but he's like at the top of my list now. And Cody Rhodes, too. I know you have your thing on him, but for him to give this guy a chance like that, I think that's quite a nice thing. So we're rooting for him, and AEW, hire this guy. He'd be good.
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. For Mike Riley at Sarge985, the show's Twitter account is at WrestleCast985. You can follow me on Twitter at IamJamesStewart, and I don't know what the hell we're going to talk about next week, but we'll figure it out. Maybe we'll be angry, maybe we'll be positive. We'll see. Hey, maybe we might have a new AEW World Champion, or maybe we'll just dump on Cain Velasquez and Brock Lesnar, or we'll dump on Tyson Fury and Braun Strowman, because that program's stupid. Yes, Mike?
Let's have the preview of the century, the greatest pay-per-view, Crown Jewel, said nobody ever.
Yuck.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.